Welcome to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. This is a Monday Brown Bagger. The date is June 15th, 2009. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. I have my co-host in the studio with me today, Tanya Hill. And we also have as a guest, before I introduce our guest, as people have to realize that the atrocities that has happened to the First Nations and also other minorities here in Canada has happened worldwide. And what we have to do is we have to directly face these atrocities of our past in the forms that we have to start teaching this within the school system. Start teaching the truth so that way the children of the next generation will not allow this to continue on, because all I'm seeing right now is I'm just basically seeing it continuing on and on and on, and sooner or later our generation has to stand up together, hold hand in hand to everyone. Doesn't matter what culture the person comes from, doesn't matter what color skin the person comes from, reach your hand out and join brothers and sisters together. Because we have to stop these atrocities and provide a better world for all. Now, with that said, I'd like to introduce our guest today. Is Facta Zarmante, who is the president of the Association for the of the Defense of the Azerbaijani Political Prisoners. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, the first thing I'd like to ask is could you give some history on the Azerbaijanians and how they are a minority within Iran and how they've been treated?
When we call the minority, sometimes according to some statistic, they might be even majority. According to a linguistic center from Texas, which is called Ethnologue, Azerbaijani and other Turkic groups are the majority in Iran, but they also could be either minority or the biggest minority in Iran. Iran has never, the both governments of Pahlavi and Islamic Republic, they have never released any statistic based on ethnicity, so there's no way of finding the accurate numbers, but many said that they might be majority in a minority situation. They are mostly concentrated minority on the northwest of Iran, and they have been very active part of the government, like government and the country. Anything that has changed in Iran, many have come from Azerbaijani areas. The first demonstrations and for the fight for the to bring the constitution to Iran was from Azerbaijan. First modern schools started from Azerbaijani area of Iran. So Azerbaijan. They have always been a very important part of Iranian society, but unfortunately for the last 80 years, we do not have, since the Pahlavi regime took over, we are not even allowed to have a single course, you can't even organize private lessons in your house and gather people to teach your language, to read and write in Azerbaijani. And they are constantly, both in the last government and this government, they are insulted in media, newspapers, and even in the society. There has been this racist jokes that is very popular within the Iranian community.
I remember you telling me one thing was when the Iranian government referred to the Azerbaijanians as cockroaches. That sounds so familiar with that the people out there during the Holocaust, the Germans and Austrians presented themselves as being from the super race. Mm. And anyone who wasn't from what they deemed their super race was considered below them. So it's basically that... When you raise those words, my mind went back to that. And also here in Canada, we have to remember how the First Nations were treated in the residential schools, how they weren't allowed to speak their language, how they had, needles put in their tongues to stop them speaking their languages. A bunch of atrocities were done to them. It was just, horrific what happened to the First Nations. Now, what happens is in 2006, you were telling me in 2006 that something happened over in Iran in regards to the Azerbaijanians that shows that this is still existing within our times. Could you tell the listening audience what happened in 2006, mm-hmm. and basically also what happened to the Azerbaijanians when they were put in the prison system in regards to the treatment that they received.
Yes, you mentioned Aryans. One of the problems we have in Iran that according to the history that they are teaching within schools, even in this Islamic regime, that they are teaching people that Persians and some other minorities are Aryans, and Turks and Arabs, they are Ottoman, they are not from Aryan race. So being an Aryan is taught still in the society. There are many Iranians, they are very proud of being Iranian, Aryan, and you can even find in the community some kids are naming their are named after being called Arya or things that in Europe, in Canada would be very disturbing to hear about the Aryan race, but it is even the Islamic regime is sometimes using, like former President Khatami said, that he's very proud that he is not an Arab, even though he is, according to his ancestors, he is a Sayyid. So Sayyid means a descendant of Prophet Muhammad, and Prophet Muhammad was an Arab. So you mentioned about that in Germany, and now the same thing is playing out for the last 80 years in Iran, and automatically Azerbaijani Turks are not, they have tried to tell Azerbaijanis that you are Aryan. And I personally, many times I have heard from some Iranians telling me that you are an Aryan as much as we are, and I have found that very disturbing. So what happened in 2006 with having this mentality, it came to that, and for many years they have called Azerbaijani Turks donkeys and humiliating names. And in May 2006, they state-run newspaper, which is tightly controlled by the government, nothing gets through. Somehow they had an Azerbaijani cockroach speaking in Azerbaijani with a Persian kid that was trying to speak to the cockroach, and cockroach couldn't understand because it was an Azerbaijani. So, and then they had, that was not enough. Following that cartoon, they had 10 ways of exterminating cockroaches. So and when I read that, you could see that they are putting some part, like stereotypes that exist within that society against Azerbaijanis. You could see that they fed it into those 10 ways of, some of them were very disturbing ways of exterminating cockroaches, that was like the title was that. So, and then following that, Azerbaijanis came out in hundreds of thousands in Tabriz and Urmia, Zanjan, and they demonstrated, and government's reaction was very harsh, as harsh. You can see now that in the international media, what is happening in Tehran, but it was very severe. Many people were shot dead. So many injured were taken to prison. Then later on, they dragged out well-known Azerbaijani activists from their homes. They shot at the demonstrators with this riot gun that sprays bullets, and that blinded some. Which one of these blinded individuals, he's in Switzerland seeking asylum. His name is Vahid Davarpana. Many people were killed. I had at that time, I started 3 years ago, I had I couldn't keep up with list of them injured and arrested. We had thousands of people. According to some records, they say probably there were 10,000 people arrested. It was a very tough situation for us to face. And on the other hand, we were facing some members of the Iranian community outside trying to connect this to separatism, and they were blocking us, and we were getting We were attacked both by the government and by some individuals outside. You could see that, and we were not organized enough. We have enough to get this word out to the international media. And Azerbaijani demonstrated for days. They were killed. They were blinded, and the world did not hear about it. You said about school. I went to school in Iran. I started my first year of school. I remember that it was one of the hardest day of my life, because I entered the school and my parents, but I was lucky, I had support of my parents very much. So my parents came with me. I remember thinking that why they think this is a big deal and I need support going to school. But I was not taught Persian at home. My parents believed that we should learn our language first. And when I entered the school, I felt it's like this, that you speak English in Vancouver, and suddenly when you enter school, you suddenly see that they are teaching totally a language that you don't hear in the society. At that time, for me, that was like a... It was like that. Now some parents are starting to speak their kids in Persian, which is another problem. The kid is between two languages, and sometimes I can see that they never learn either of them. So I entered the school, and I was told, my parents, they asked the principal to allow me to sometimes speak in my language, but... I quickly figured out that they are not going to let... It was against the law at that time. Not the education system was set like that, that you were not allowed to speak anything but Persian. And students before me, like 5-6 years years before me, they were even fined for speaking my language. What I did, I cried and refused to go to school for some time, and finally I gave up. Students were fined for speaking their language. We had a 15-year-old Mohammad Reza Avaspur, who wrote on the wall that my mother tongue would not die, and they arrested that kid and they suspended him from his feet in the Ministry of Intelligence. They have this called Etelat. They have had many kids removed from teenagers for just asking to be educated in their language. And now even in kindergartens, they teach kids that if you speak your language at home, little bird gonna report to the teacher.
Like secret police sort of thing over what happened during the Soviet Union eras, where they had the KGB in existence.
Yes, they put this really disturbing things in little children's mind. I'm surprised at how people are still resistant and how language still exists with them. But we have lost many of our... And in addition to that, we have this education system that as you go up, you become more racist. I can bluntly say this. I was invited, I was selected by the Office of High Commissioner to tell my story in Durban conference. And I told them our problem is that our education system teaches people to be racist. And that's also some members of all my community also, when they went up, especially if you study history and those are the literature, everything is for glorifying Persian empire, Persian ethnic group, and then demonizing others, like Arabs, even though it is a Muslim country. But Arabs are constantly blamed for anything that happens in Iran. And Turks are also called, in even some of the school books, they are called savages. So imagine, like, I used to read history books in school and come home puzzled, or I would hear about some poets, which at home we would call him Azerbaijani, and in my school books it was called Persian. And then I would come to my father with these questions that what's happening if for example, Nizami is, what is he? Is he Azerbaijani or Persian? So my school says he's a Persian, and at home we read his poetry in Azerbaijani. We would read, at some point my father said, there's no need to read these history books. You just try to pass these courses. So you can see that the education system in Iran is teaching kids either to hate themselves or to hate, if they are part of Arabs or the Turkish community, or hate others. And that is creating a problem. I receive many emails from some scholars even from all around the world, or people even here. I have seen that they write very disturbing things about my work. And I don't blame them. If I read as many racist books as they have, I would have become the same way. I hope not, but I'm lucky I'm not. But I'm just trying to say that how much effort is put. Mm-hmm.
And Fakta, hi, how are you doing?
Hi.
Thank you for telling us all these very horrific stories, but it's very interesting to learn about the racism in Iran. I had heard about the religious racism, like against Sufis and against people who practice any other religion other than Islam. Can you tell us anything about that, I saw a show the other day about an underground Sufi group, and they have to practice their religion secretly. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yes, we have had cases of we try to concentrate on the issues of ethnic minorities, and within that, since none of the other human rights groups in Iran, they really do much about it, and within that we receive cases of Azerbaijani or other ethnic religious minorities. Sufis is there are certain religion, like other than Christianity, Judaism, and like Baha'is, you can see that they are banned, like Baha'is and Sufism and some other smaller ethnic groups, that they have their own kind of sect. But also we have to add that also Sunnis are facing discrimination in Iran. For example, we have a very large group in Azerbaijan called Kura Sunnis, that they face, and another group that usually world has not heard about them, that they are a Sunni Azerbaijani group, that they live around Urmi and in West Azerbaijani province, that they are facing discrimination in every levels of life. Like Kurds and Baluchis are also Sunnis. And specifically about Sufis, in Azerbaijan, they had a couple of cases that they force these Sufi members of the Ahle Haq group to shave their mustache, and that is very sacred for them. And some of these kids were distributed some pamphlets asking for respect in that area, and that resulted in authorities attacking their village, and there was violence which resulted in capture of a couple of members of this community, and one of them were killed I think 2 months ago, was executed by government, and another one is awaiting execution. In ethnic minorities, when they are also not Shia, they face double discrimination, and that's
sorry, I just wanted to ask you, you were saying that this type of discrimination goes back to around 80 years ago. Does this discrimination against minorities or ethnic minorities have anything? Does it have anything to do with the British or any sort of influence like that? Because it, a lot of times, like in Africa and in many other places, after the British Empire was there, you know, a lot of drawing borders, and it seemed to bring up and cause and perpetuate a lot of racism.
There is a book called Iran and Challenge of Diversity by York University professor from Toronto, Dr. Ali Reza Askerzadeh. That's an excellent book to read about that, because it explains how racist ideas from West, from Germany and other places, how the construction of the history in Iran and the Aryan race started and how it came to Iran. And so now we can see that in the last 100 years, I believe that it has made a dysfunctional society in Iran. So then maybe one day you will have him as a guest and he can go in details.
We really welcome that too. We only have a couple minutes left before we have to take a break. So could you leave the listening audience contact information just in case they want to email you, ask you some more information when your next talk is going to be here in Vancouver, so that way people can get a chance to meet you in person?
Sure. They can Google us as ADAPP, ADAPP. This is Association for Defense of Azerbaijani Political Prisoners in Iran. And we also have a website, www.adapp.info. They can Google my name. Also, there are a lot of materials, the talks and my speeches in United Nations and all around the world. So it's a Fakhd Zamani, and they can contact me through our contact email on our website, or they can contact me at zfakhteh@hotmail.com.
And I just have one last question for you. You've been away from the Azerbaijani for about 19 years now. If there's anything that you could envision yourself, Dr. Martin Luther King has a vision, one day when all people stand together, hold hand in hand, what would be your vision on your homeland in closing? If you could just leave, what would you like to see as a vision, a dream for the future for the children who are Azerbaijani at this time?
For all Iran, I wish that one day we all could live in that land with respect and love and equal rights for everyone. Shia, Sunni, Azerbaijani, Persian, Turkmen, Baluchi, Arab, everyone, Luri. There are many, many different culture and beautiful languages that are not taught, and I wish one day everyone, a Kurdish kid, can go in and learn about his or her history, and Azerbaijani, Arab, Baluchis, everyone, we could be proud of who we are, not to be ashamed of who we are, and society would let us do that in Iran.
Thank you so much for agreeing to come on today. And like to remind the listening audience, you listen to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. This is Monday Brown Bagger. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with our next guest. Welcome back to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. You're listening to Monday Brown Bagger. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. At this time, we're having a little bit of technical problem, so we've called our second guest, and we've put the microphone right up to the phone, and we're going to do it old-fashioned way right now, because we're having problems with our phone here. Now, before I introduce our guest, I'd like to say that I'm not a backer of Mr. Obama, because I view what he's doing right now is he's still keeping the war crimes going, the false wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, going in, which is only enriching a few, where it oppresses the masses of these nations, a stimulus package that awards the super rich with taxpayer money while forcing ordinary people to live in homeless camps, and a war on terrorism that I view is like the persecution oppression in 1984 becoming a reality throughout the world. With the above said, our second guest is a very outspoken, controversial individual whose YouTube video of Hail Hitler, Hail Obama has caught my eyes, and I'm someone who believes strongly that sooner or later history repeats itself, and the only thing that keeps us safe is to learn from our past and do not let the atrocities from our past being repeated within our times. As I finish saying this, our upcoming guest, who is in charge of the ATLA ministry out of New York, has courageously put himself on the line to speak his word out to others. And now I'd like to introduce Honorable Pastor David James Manning.
Thank you, Reginald, for having me. It's good to be on your program today.
Well, thank you so much. And for the listening audience, on May 4th, 2009, we played your video right before we did an interview with Jesse Woodrow, excuse me. And what happened was our listening audience got a chance to hear everything that was in there. Could you quickly, for the people that hadn't have a chance to listen to that, could you quickly just briefly touch on everything that was said in that video ever so briefly?
You mean Hail Hitler, Hail Obama?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, essentially what I was pointing out going back is during the primary season, this was before Obama actually stole the nomination from Hillary Clinton, I was pointing out how the comparison between Hitler and Obama in terms of their meteor type of rise, the large crowds being attracted to them, how they came from nowhere to amass a great amount of power suddenly, and that Obama being the orator that he is, Hitler being the orator that he is, Hitler being sort of a dysfunctional family product, Obama being a similar dysfunctional family product as well, and they're both seizing power and their plans for what they will do, and how people are just abdicating all reasonable constraints and are pretty much worshiping and believing everything that this leader says, even though it is obvious that most of the things that he believes and says are maniacal. I kind of pointed that out in the comparison of the two, and they compare even greater at present. I could, you know, and then a little bit later on, I'll talk a little bit more about how the comparison has really panned out since the election.
And what happens is right now there's 20 czars which are running the economy within the United States of America, appointed by the Obama administration, and they only have to report to the president. They don't have to report to the people. To me, I view this as an example of the five-year plans which were used during the old Soviet Union days of Lenin and Stalin. With this in mind, one could say that the American people are being marched towards the United Soviet Union. Pastor, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, not only do we have these czars, and the most recent one, just to point it, last week was the Pay Czar, who now regulates, looks at any major corporation in America and looks at the CEO or any other executive's pay scale, and if the Obama administration does not approve of it, can either remove that person, regulate their pay, and Congress has not approved this. This has been done by executive order, and no one is rising up in Congress to stop this activity. Moreover, Obama has put in place an executive order that allows the Obama administration under the Federal Treasury Act to review any business that is subject to taxes, to go into that business if that business looks like it's either leaning in a way that could be anti the political structure for the day, whether you call it anti-American or anti-Obama, anti-Democrat, anti-the Republic of America, any of those things. The Obama administration has the power now, because that corporation pays taxes and subject to tax regulations, to go in and to dismantle that corporation, just like they did Chrysler, just like they did General Motors. And as you know, the Obama administration, or they say now the American taxpayer, owns 80% of AIG, 34% of Citicorp, which is a massive trillion-dollar banking industry, and 60% of General Motors. And the beat just goes on. Hitler did the exact same thing, and the people stood by and watched that happen. These czars that you made mention of are being being established, and they only have to answer to Obama. Most people don't even know who they are. Congress is not, they're not responsible to Congress or any kind of legislation, only the Obama administration.
And what happens is there's a song from the 60s put out. It's called One Tin Soldier. And it talks about the people on the hilltop willing to share with the people in the valley. Now, with that in mind, I'd like to quickly, if Pastor, I'm just going to quickly, briefly talk about something, and I'll get you to comment on it. Here in Vancouver, there's a part of East, it's called East Hastings, which is the poorest postal code here in Canada. You're watching people using drugs. You're watching people sleeping in the street. You're watching alcoholism. You're seeing people that their spirit's been torn from them. While we watch companies like Ashgrove and Lafarge, Lafarge is the biggest cement company in the United States and Canada, with headquarters over in France. We're watching them stealing our province blind. And what happens is that while this is happening, you're watching bureaucrats and politicians are standing by and not doing anything about it, as shown by the court documents I have on my website and other pieces of information under the link of God Agreed. Now, with one of the Ten Commandments being, thou shalt not steal, Pastor, how can we, the people of the province of British Columbia, Canada, regain the taxable assets and have them returned to our public coffers, which would mean lower taxes and more social programs and higher minimum wage to help the people, in keeping with the memory of Jesus Christ when he would go out and help out all people, in keeping with the saying, I am my brother and sister keeper?
I'm not sure of the structure of government, legislators, senators, how that operates, that then oversees how monies and businesses operate in Canada. I don't know that very well, so it would be very difficult for me to talk about a legislative way of approaching such. Yeah. But basically, all around the world, the way this is done is that you make the people who are stealing, the people who are involved in the ripoff, you make them pay by uniting the people who are being abused with a strong voice of people being abused, and then from within that group, you must choose a leader. And I'll tell you this, that you're not going to get anywhere with corporations that I just heard you make mention of, with headquarters in France and ripping off the way they're ripping off. Someone's going to have to step to the front who's going to be willing to sacrifice themselves, sacrifice perhaps their liberty in order to lead the group. But the group ultimately will be victorious. But it will not happen without sacrifice and to some degree quasi-revolution, if you will.
And the next question I have for you, do you see the day when the real dream that Martin Luther King had comes to reality, where all men, all women, all children will stand together on a hilltop holding hand in hand?
I tell you the truth. I have been so disappointed, and not in Obama, but in the people who should be manifesting the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. dream. You know, Reginald, just to hear you call his name, since Obama, nobody even talks about Dr. King. I don't know if you've noticed that, but here in America, Dr. King used to be the center of attraction, and rightly so, among African-American people and a large segment of America in general. But since Obama, he has been swept, kicked, if you will, to the curb. His ideas and his dreams seem so immature. And you can see it in the I live here in Harlem among black people, and I see it on television. I see it when I walk the streets. People have forgotten about Dr. King, and they're now worshiping this Hitler called Obama. So do I believe that the day will come? I can tell you now, I pray that it will, but it looks very dismal at present. People have forgotten those words. They don't even talk about Dr. King anymore. And this man has only been around for a year. He has swept. I heard Cornel West, who is professor at Princeton University, I think, of black religious studies or something of that nature, a fairly well-noted black leader, social activist, who stated that since Obama, most black leaders are now marginalized and don't even have a voice anymore. This is absolutely incredible. So I pray that it will happen one day. It looks bleak.
And for listening audience, I've always mentioned about the fact that I lived in exile in the United States of America for almost 5 years of my life. I wrote something that really got some people in Alberta angry with me. I wrote about the rise of the Fourth Reich, and they didn't like that. So I'd spend time down in the United States. And my wife and I, we ended up down in the city of Las Vegas, Nevada, of all places to end up. And the people aren't familiar with the motto for the state is a battle born. I remember that when we first arrived, there was an Afro-American gentleman there, and I told him what we've gone through and everything, and he turned to me and he said, because of the color of your skin, you'll be okay. And I'm looking at the gentleman, I'm going, excuse me? And being someone that, you know, I don't want to judge someone on outward appearance. I want to judge a person on their thoughts, on their heart. That's what we should be doing it. And that's what makes me so sad is when I keep on seeing the atrocities of humanity being repeated again and again and again. And it, to the point, you know, it makes you kind of sick there, Pastor. But, you know, I believe in the human spirit within us is that we have to rise above it. And what happens is you were talking, one of your videos talked about the stock market fraud. And I'd like to quickly point to the fact that AIG, we had a past guest on that talked about AIG used to be a cover for the CIA over in Asia. I was also told in 2004 by a gentleman who used to be involved with California trading that the housing price was going to crash and the bubble was going to burst. So, you know, I've heard an awful lot of information from different people, different groups that talked about this fraud happening. Have you found out any more information on different groups that may have been involved that, you might want to wish to share with the listening audience right now?
Oh, but I don't have any more concrete information than anything I say along this issue, the stock market fraud, AIG, the present state of the American stock market, Securities Exchange, the Federal Reserve, the Treasury, all of these things. But let me just share this. There is a plan afoot at present, looking at the present state of the economy in America. The stock market has become a tool of the Obama administration. I'm not sure whether or not he is the one who instigated this, but I do think that when you look at people like Alan Greenspan and you look at the owner of Berkshire Hathaway's, I forget his name right now, God, he's a gazillionaire investor. I can't think of his name right now for the name of me, but for the life of me. But anyway, they have come out over the last couple of months when the stock market here in America has risen 34% in just a couple of months from what it was at the end of February. And that is because there is manipulation within the market to bring people back into the market, to pump money into it, but it's all a farce. It is nothing more than a farce. That much I'm very much sure of. The Treasury Department, Ben Bernanke, who's in charge of the Securities Exchange Commission, they're all manipulating the minds of people and the market is how that's being done. While the economy is still tanking, unemployment is still skyrocketing, people are still out of jobs, we're facing the worst times we've ever faced economically, yet the Obama administration is using the stock market in that regard. So, yeah, whether or not AIG is a part of the CIA administration, it would be a perfect cover because AIG goes into every nation on the planet and with the guise of trying to give fuel and give structure for businesses. So I can certainly appreciate that being a possibility.
And my co-host has a quick question to ask
you.
No,
I don't.
Okay, I guess my co-host doesn't have a question. I do apologize that we only have a couple minutes left there, Pastor. Could you leave us with some contact information just in case the listening audience wish to ask you some questions that we didn't cover?
Yeah, the name of the person I was trying to think of just a moment ago is Warren Buffett. That's who I was trying to call the name of. Alan Greenspan, Warren Buffett is the president of Berkshire Hathaway, this major, mega trillion-dollar investment firm. Yeah, in order to contact our ministry, you can do so at atlah.org. That's atlah.org. Once you go into our site, there's a zillion things that you can find and do and find out about us. Of course, you can email us. Once you get into the site, there'll be a place where you can email, ask questions, and we'll try to respond to them as well. But it's Atlah, A-T-L-A-H.org.
And also, Pastor, we have about 2 minutes left, but I wanted to quickly touch on something I read on your website. Is it, you come from a background when you were a youth, you were in trouble with the law, and you're able to overcome it. Could you leave some last words with the listening audience to tell them how they can overcome the obstacles within their life and able to create a better world for themselves and everyone else?
I became very delusioned at the back in the 60s. Actually, started in the late 60s, 69, 70, and by the time I reached 72, 73, 1972, 73, I had given up on America, and those days were days of great upheaval. The war in Vietnam, there was social unrest, there was the death of Dr. King had happened a few years earlier. At any rate, and I found myself in prison for crimes that I'd done because I wasn't working, so I started stealing, and that's what I did. And I was arrested for it and sentenced. But I asked Almighty God to help me turn my life around, and He absolutely did. And the thing that has kept me more so than anything else is that I came back into the community of a community like Harlem where there's so many young men just like me, the same anger that I had, and I'm working in the community. And Reginald, I'll say this to your audience, the best way to, once having gone astray, to make sure you don't ever repeat that again is to go and help people who were once like you. By continually seeing yourself and other people every day, it reminds you how you must stay on focus. And the other thing is that a person such as yourself, and I sense in these brief moments I've had with you, that obviously you want to help people. You're concerned about injustice at every level, and you truly want to. And I spoke also about someone who must be willing to sacrifice, and I know that you would probably put your neck on the chopping block in order to be able to help people, to bring them the truth. That is what keeps us focused. That's what keeps me focused, and it'll keep anybody who's been in trouble, who's lost their way, get out there and start helping people that have also lost their way, and you'll find that you rise to great heights.
Well, thank you, Pastor. Yeah, my wife and I have truly done that. We don't have any more time left to get into that, but we're definitely going to have to get you back on as a guest, hopefully in probably about August or September sometime, and to allow you more time to talk. We do apologize. We had technical problem with our equipment here. We had to go the old-fashioned way of putting the mic right up to the phone. But, you know, when we get you back on, we hope to have the equipment working better at that time. But you've been very informative, and thank you so much. That was Pastor James David Manning from Atla Ministry out of New York. This is Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO, Monday Brown Bagger. Thank you so much for listening in.